Well, first of all, to all the dads, happy Father's Day to all of you from my heart as a fellow dad. No, I don't have any kids, but of course, in the spiritual life, I am a father, and therefore you call me Father. What a great day to have a baptism on Father's Day. And always a great day to have a baptism, no matter what day it is. As it said at the beginning, this baptism adds to the number of baptized Christians. And the fullness of Christianity is found right here in God's holy church. As I was preparing this homily, it occurred to me that it seems to me that these readings are profound for fatherhood. And if you're attentive, you'll go, well, wasn't that first reading from Job? And I think we all know the story of Job, at least a cursory understanding that Job suffered a lot. Well, let me give you just a little quick background. You remember that Job was a righteous man before God, blameless. Job had attained what we might call in our country the American dream. He may have been at that time equivalent to what a Bill Gates is in terms of wealth. He had everything, and everything that he did, God seemed to turn to gold. He blessed him, and Job's life was without suffering, so it seemed. And so his life was going on, things were going well, materially, family-wise. He and his wife had 10 children. They had 7 boys and 3 girls. And then, in one fell swoop, he lost everything. He lost all of his land, all of his cattle, his sheep, his camels, and all those who cared for them lost them all. The land and the sheep had been stolen and usurped, and all of those people, save 3, were killed and murdered. And then the last message he received as he got these one after another was, all 10 of your children are dead. They were in the old eldest son's house having a party because all things were going well. And a great wind from the heavens came, knocked the house down, killed them all. And to add insult to injury or injury to insult, he was struck with boils all over his body. Yet not once did Job blaspheme God. And then after a long period of really poor counsel from his family and his friends about why, Job, this must have happened to you. You can't be righteous after all, because God doesn't do this to those who are righteous and blameless. So you must have done something wrong. Job said, no, I'm blameless before God. And as he sits in his misery, finally, he reaches up to the heavens and he says, in effect, God, why? Why are you doing this to me? Make it stop. And that takes us to our first reading. And the Lord addressed Job out of the storm. That's a sign of God's divinity, but also it could be a sign of his wrath. It is certainly a sign of his presence. And he questions Job. Now, in our first reading, again, we've got one of these situations where this first reading is from Job 38, 1 through 11, but they take out verses 2 through 6. I'm not them. I just wish, from my point of view, from what little I can see, I just wish they would include it. So I will. So here's what it says, and this really sets the tone, literally, for how God addresses Job. Then the Lord addressed Job out of the storm and said, who is this who obscures divine plans with words of ignorance? Gird up your loins now like a man. I will question you and you tell me the answers. Where were you when I founded the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. You can hear God's tone with Job. Gird up your loins. That's a euphemism for, you want to challenge me. Okay. But it's not a good fight to pick, Job. You want to challenge me? All right. I'm going to ask you questions. Answer me if you can. There's almost a fatherly sarcasm in that. In other words, Job, you're picking the wrong fight. You're picking the wrong fight. Don't question my motives. And so it goes on, and God basically recounts creation. Where were you when I put each star in the heavens by name? When I formed the sea and gave it its boundaries with the shore? Have you ever held the span of the universe in your hand?" And of course, Job is struck silent. And finally, he realizes and says, "Lord, I've been foolish." Now, take that backdrop into the gospel. Remembering Job, how his life turned upside down, and now you have the apostles with Jesus in a boat. Big deal. They're fishermen, and they're in a boat. It is a big deal. The boat with the apostles and Jesus is an image of the church. That's what's being indicated here. It's also an image of the domestic church, the family. And it's also an image of God's holy family around the world, society. What's happening? Well, we read, a violent squall came up and waves were breaking over the boat so that it was already filling up. They were crossing the Sea of Galilee, which is probably the size of Lake Winnebago, roughly. But it's deeper, and it can have waves like Lake Michigan. And I don't know about you, but if you're miles offshore and your boat's filling up, you got a crisis on your hands. And you got to do something quickly. Where is Jesus? He's in the back of the boat sleeping. "Lord, don't you care that we're perishing? We're about to die here. And you don't seem to care. You seem to be asleep in the back of the boat." Can you relate? Has your boat ever been filling up faster than you can bail it out? Have you been in a situation that seemed like a crisis and you didn't know how you were going to handle it? Have you ever suffered like Job, had great loss in your life and didn't know how you were going to get through it? Maybe you're going through that now. You watch the news and you see violence in our streets like we've not seen, maybe since the Civil War. We see a turning upside down of reality. We see kids that are confused. We see suicide rates skyrocketing amongst young kids. Whether it's societal, whether it's in your own family, maybe it's just in your own life. Can you relate that sometimes we just reach up and say, "God, stop. Make it stop. Why are you punishing me?" Well, God's not exacting a pound of flesh. Can he make it stop? Yeah, he can. Jesus did with a word, quiet. And he stilled the sea. "Lord, if you got the power, why won't you?" Well, each event in our lives is one sentence of one paragraph of one chapter of the whole book of salvation history. And it all is ingredient with each other. It all fits together. Let me give you a concrete example. I think I shared this with you. Again, I won't get into details, but when I was 10, I was skiing and I broke my leg. And so my dad came down and got me. I didn't want to go in an ambulance. I was fearful of that. So my dad came and got me. They put me in the back of the car. We had a big old 72 Impala. It was like a sofa on wheels. And they slid me in the back seat. Not vinyl seats, brush seats, which will be important in a second. My dad brought me to the emergency room. And the doctor opened up the door at my feet. And I had a splint on my leg. And the doctor, I'm not good at names or faces. I will never forget this doctor's face. He looked like John Denver, by the way. He reached in and he grabbed me by my broken leg and pulled me out. It put me on a gurney, wheeled me into the hospital, into the emergency room. Now, back then, we wore jeans and long johns. That's how we didn't have ski pants or anything. Now, jeans and long johns and a broken leg, how might you think a good way to get those pants off would be? Scissors, maybe? Just guessing, but I think that's a good idea. Not there. Oh, no. They pulled them off. I ended up 4 days in the hospital in shock. But here's the point. At one point, My eyes flooded with tears. I was in agony. I was terrified. And I turned to my dad, who was right there. I said, "Dad, make him stop." I screamed, "Make him stop." And my dad told me afterwards that broke his heart. Because as much unnecessary pain as he's inflicting, they still had to inflict pain to manipulate my leg to make sure that take the x-rays. And he said, "I couldn't make him stop. Because I knew you had to go through that pain in order to be healed." You see, my dad knew, but in a way, he knew something he couldn't convey to me at that time. I couldn't even hear it, even if he would have said it, because I was so focused on my pain. I just wanted it to stop. But what my dad knew is that there was a greater good that was going to come out of the pain. And so it is with our Father. So it is with our Heavenly Father. Does God cause suffering? No, He does not. But He allows it. And He allows it because He's going to bring a greater good out of it. And yet when we're going through it, when we're carrying that cross, we can't see anything but the pain. We can't feel anything but the weight of the cross. And yet God says, "I, your Father, know that this is ultimately going to be good for you. Trust me. Trust me." So we're tempted to reach out and cry out, "Father, make it stop. Go ahead, do it. Do it." But just remember, if He doesn't do it when we want, how we want, it's like my dad standing at the side of the gurney saying, "I can't convey it to you right now. You won't understand it. But trust me, there's something even greater that will come from it." The greater the suffering, the greater the good that God will bring from it. Look no further than the cross. The greatest evil, the greatest suffering brought the greatest good and continues to give right here in the Holy Eucharist. "This is my body given for your life."